720 WGN. This is The Beat as the sports conversation continues. Jordan Bernfield's in. I'm Kevin Powell. We're with you for the next 2.5 hours.
We're so versatile.
First 2.5 hours down, and they flew by. White Sox Weekly's over. Before White Sox Weekly, we were kind of in no man's land because we always have to kind of monitor where Northwestern's game is at, and then we have to fill depending on how early the game ends. It just happened to be one of the quickest Northwestern games of the year. They beat Illinois, by the way, if anybody missed that. Northwestern, as bad as a season as it has been, that's a big win for them. That's a big win, and that one's not good for Illinois. But anyway, we had a lot of time because everyone just ran the ball, so the clock was moving the whole time. So we had a wide-ranging conversation before White Sox Weekly that involved leftovers from Thanksgiving. My old football coach called in, which was random, but it was good to hear from him. Talk some sports as well. We also mentioned, as we look back on the decade, really, we have 1 month left in the decade. I kind of just threw this out there just to garner some conversation. Best Chicago sports player over the last decade.
To me, if you're asking me, and I believe,
yeah, because we never got to it earlier, so because we had to get to White Sox Weekly. So I'm, and you sounded like you had a no-brainer.
To me, it's Patrick Kane. That is a no-brainer. They won 3 Stanley Cups. He won a Hart Trophy. I know that he won the Calder Trophy before 2010, technically.
Yeah.
But even though Jonathan Toews, you could argue, is the was, you know, sort of the face or the captain and all that stuff, Patrick Kane is the best player. I mean, he scored the winning goal of the 2010 Stanley Cup Final, which was their first Stanley Cup victory in 49 years, right? Then he was, you think about the Vancouver series of that Stanley Cup run when he had the hat trick in Game 6 at home, or was it San Jose, right? When San Jose, when he had the hat trick. And, I mean, being at that game, I felt like the roof of the United Center was going to come off. There have been so many moments in that run for the Blackhawks, which was an incredible run. Obviously, 3 championships. But Patrick Kane, to me, is the athlete of the decade in this city because there was 90% good and there was some bad with Patrick Kane, but he was always, I feel like, one of the biggest stars and the focal points of a winning team that lasted for almost the entire decade.
I'm going to be honest. That's a great call because it's been start to finish. Not to mention he's still playing as one of the best players in the National Hockey League. The man has not missed a beat. He continues to get better. Last year, statistically, was one of his best seasons.
Yes.
So if you look at full body of work, it's tough to argue against that, Jordan. Curtis had mentioned Marian Hossa, the significance. Again, I don't know if he was if there was enough body of work when he was with the Blackhawks.
I mean, he was great.
Nothing against him. Great. I'm just saying if we are sizing up all these guys and factoring in all things, it is tough to argue against Patrick Kane. I mean, you started the decade with a Stanley Cup.
I mean, if there's
the game-winning goal, the series-winning goal, and he just continues to play well. Tough to argue against Patrick Kane as the best Chicago sports athlete over the last decade.
I mean, to me, if there was a top 10 list, most of the players that would be on that list, Kevin, are Blackhawks and Cubs for obvious reasons. And if we're going 2010s, I think that you could make arguments for Kane, you can make argument for Toews, you can make an argument for Hossa. I think you can make a strong argument for Duncan Keith.
Yep.
And the amount of minutes he played, won a Norris Trophy, obviously part of 3 Stanley Cup teams, but one of the faces of the franchise for sure, in his tenure with the Blackhawks and still obviously playing for them. I think that when it comes to the Cubs, you would say Anthony Rizzo is sort of like the Jonathan Toews, face of the franchise, one of the best players. But then you think about two of the most impactful players in the decade for the Cubs, Chris Bryant, Rookie of the Year, MVP, incredible run with them going to the World Series and finally winning in 2016. And I think John Lester, for what he meant to the Cubs in terms of coming here at the time that he did and buying into being a part of a team that was on the up but had not accomplished anything prior to him signing on the dotted line. When he signed with the Cubs, that's when things turned for them in 2015, and they made that run to the NLCS. And so to me, you know, those are 6 guys right off the top. I think that you could maybe, you know, Jay Cutler's career spanned over really the 2 decades. The Bears didn't win anything, so but he was certainly an extremely important part of the Bears prior to, you know, him leaving town at the end of his career in the NFL. But, you know, unfortunately for the White Sox, you could say Chris Sale would probably be in the top 10 because he had a great run with the White Sox. But unfortunately, the team didn't do a whole lot of winning in this decade. So I think that, you know, those are guys that come to mind for me. And obviously, Derrick Rose would be near the top of this list for obvious reasons. You know, the 2010 run with the team, the MVP, the rise and fall, and really all the things that went along with Derrick Rose. He'd be on it. But I think after that, you know, does Joakim Noah make this list? Maybe, but I don't think so.
We could break down the all-decade team for each team because it's a little bit different with all things considered. This is The Beat, 312-981-7200. If you want to chime in the conversation at any point, text or call. We'll dive into some Bears conversation as well, Jordan. I have thoughts. More coming up on The Beat.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup! And won the Stanley Cup for the second time in four seasons! The Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup! They beat the Boston Bruins here tonight in Boston! The final score in Game 6, the Blackhawks 3 and the Bruins 2! And Lord Stanley is moving back to the Windy City!
720 WGN, this is The Beat. We're remembering some of the great Chicago sports moment from the last decade. As it comes to a close, you'll hear those guys here on WGN in a couple of hours. John Weideman and Troy Murray will have the call for the Blackhawks-Avalanche game in Denver tonight. Kevin Powell alongside Jordan Bernfield. We have a very special guest in studio. Following a great victory for the Northwestern Wildcats, the voice of the Cats, Dave Ennett, with a surprise visit to the show today. How are you, Dave?
Yeah, surprise to me too, Kev. So I didn't realize till I was driving back that this is the end of the decade. But I want to thank you guys for letting me know that.
Yeah,
I hadn't really thought about it.
I know.
I didn't really either. But then now it seems like everyone is doing these topics now. And so now I'm like, okay, I guess we got to jump in on it because it makes for some interesting conversation.
I think it's because there's no slow news days anymore. So nobody's really gotten caught up with the fact that the decade's coming to a close. But
that's true.
I'm seeing more and more stuff pop out. So Dave Ennett here in the WGN studios following a Northwestern victory. Dave, I know not the season Pat Fitzgerald and company were hoping for, none of us were hoping for, but you know, and the flip side, Illinois having a good year, they're headed to a bowl, but that had to feel good, Dave. Northwestern getting the win today.
I think that they showed that they came out and really were intent on winning the game and keeping the Land of Lincoln Trophy, which is a big deal to them, and you know, doesn't maybe have some of the length of some of the other trophies that were, you know, the old Oaken Bucket that Indiana won today with their win over Purdue. But remember, it replaced another trophy that had been there for years and years. I think it was, you have to keep it in perspective a little bit. It was a rough year for Northwestern, not the year they expected. It was a good year for the most part for Illinois. And for them to go from winning two games each of the last 2 years and a winless season in there, and then to come out with a 6-win season, a chance for a 7th win at a postseason game, that's a sign of progress. But I think it was a big deal for Northwestern, not just to win the game, guys, but to win it the way they want it and to do what they like to do on a day in the Midwest where it's tough to throw the ball. It was windy, it was rainy, it was wet, it was damp, it was cold, and they ran the ball for almost 400 yards.
Yeah, well, that, and I think, too, that when I look at this season, as rough as it was for the Cats, I almost feel like the positive might be, I guess we'll see, but the positive might be that they used so much of the depth chart this year because so many guys were hurt that the hope, obviously, is that next year that could benefit them. Because, listen, any team that loses three quarterbacks is probably going to be in the situation that Northwestern was. I don't feel like this was a year, like you said. It happened because, I mean, they were decimated. That's how I look at it. So I don't even feel like they should feel so bad about the season other than the fact that that's not the standard anymore.
Well, here's the thing. They had some games that they were in at the end and couldn't close them out or couldn't make a stop when they needed to against Nebraska, against Purdue. And they turned the ball over so many times. And, I mean, they did it today again and almost did it a second time and had it wiped out by a penalty. But that said, you're exactly right. They played a lot of guys. They found some guys out of necessity at running back in particular where they were converting wide receivers to running back, and these guys were – eating up huge chunks of yardage. I mean, this Coco Azima, a
great
speedy
name,
freshman. It's a great name.
Fantastic.
Of course, Ted Albrecht only called him Azuma once, but that might be his nickname. I mean, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But he was terrific today in his first game at running back. He had a 62-yard run. He ran for over 100 yards. He had a 24-yard touchdown run. Andrew Marty, in his first start at quarterback, I thought played really well and gave some hope there that he can be a contributor in the future. I don't know if he's going to be the starting quarterback next year. I don't know if Coco Azuma is there. I said it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to be playing running back or go back to defense next year. But the point is, out of necessity, you kind of discover some options along the way. And here's the other thing to always keep in mind when you're talking about college football and the future. College football has become a transfer game now. And Northwestern hasn't played the transfer game to the extent that other schools have. Look, Illinois had a lot of success with guys who came into their program from other schools. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way the system is right now until they change it. And so, will Northwestern get more involved? I think it's a tougher place to transfer to, but will they get more involved in that transfer game? And the other thing you don't know is who transfers from what program to another. And will there be guys who are playing now for Northwestern who think, well, I was the fifth running back, and there's four guys ahead of me, and I don't know if I can beat them out. Maybe I should go somewhere else.
When you look back at the season, not to dwell on a rough season, but when you look at the overall play and top to bottom throughout the schedule, I mean, how does it change your viewpoint of what next year is going to bring for Northwestern football? I mean, do you chalk this up as kind of a fluky type season where there are some injuries and some bad bounces, or how do you forecast moving forward after what you saw throughout the length of the season?
Kevin, I think you said that very well. I would qualify that, though, because I do think that they have some needs they'll have to address and some questions they have to figure out, and quarterback first and foremost.
Yeah.
But that said, this defense gave them a chance all year, and I think this defense, for the most part, and again, you don't know anymore in college football. I mean,
right,
that's the reality of it. But most of these guys are going to be back next year, and I think this defense is going to be really good again. You know, Mike Hankowitz, the defensive coordinator, just finished his 50th year as an assistant coach in college football.
Wow.
I mean, at
amazing.
Some point, he yeah. probably won't coach anymore. But as far as I know, he's going to come back next year. And I think the defense will continue to be a force. You also look at their schedule for next year. And I don't like playing that schedule game because I looked at the schedule this year, and it looked daunting. Everybody said, wow, that's a really tough schedule. You got Ohio State, you got Wisconsin, you got Nebraska. Well, you know, they played those teams last year, too. They played Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. But every year is different, so you just don't know. They open at Michigan State. Michigan State had a rough year, as did Northwestern. Is Michigan State going to be the same team come September 5th? So they play Wisconsin at Wrigley Field next year. So
that's
there are
cool.
a lot of
yeah.
questions. You know, what's the future? What's Wisconsin going to look like next year? So I think there are a lot of questions, but I do think that this program has been built for long-term success and to sustain it, and I don't think that one bad year, even though I didn't think they'd have a year quite like this
yeah.
anymore, it can happen to anybody, and I believe Pat Fitzgerald when he says this is never going to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they had sort of a fluky bad year because of the injuries. I will stand by that, but I mm-hmm. do think you also said it right, which is that because there were so many questions at quarterback, that is the one thing that could elongate this struggle, right? So how do they figure out? Because it didn't seem like going into the year that the quarterback position was going to be a problem. It seemed like it was a strength. I mean, it was new guys, but both guys, I think you could have made an argument, could have been really nice options to step in and play the position. And then you're watching at the end of the year, and it's like, oh, boy, I mean, they've and when you have to play four quarterbacks in a year, that's obviously a disaster.
Well, four and really, I mean, if you factor in the fact they played T.J. Green in that first game and
right, yeah.
he got hurt.
Right.
There
yeah.
are a couple others who make cameos, Jason Whitaker. But essentially, yes,
yeah.
four. And I think that if you look at it right now, I don't think you can answer the question. I mean, I think Andrew Marty was impressive these last couple of games. I think Hunter Johnson came here with all the credentials and with the advanced buildup, which Pat Fitzgerald cautioned everybody, just let's tap the brakes a little bit here on this guy, and it's a battle for the job. what's his situation going to be next year? Aiden Smith started, what, six games? Is he in the picture for next year? I mean, so there's so many. Will there be somebody else? I mean, that's another thing right. We don't know. So
that may be where you could find a transfer quarterback like Illinois did with Peters. I mean, maybe you find someone that wants to come in. And because, listen, I could make the argument 2 years ago, or a year ago at this time, Northwestern is playing, is getting ready for the Big Ten championship game. So it's not like this team is a typical, you know, 3-9 team or whatever they finished. Yeah, 3-9 this year. So I could make the argument, if I'm a grad transfer quarterback, hey, I could come in and turn this team back into something that has a shot to win the West.
And the one thing about this program is, if you look at it, they have, with the exception of this season, they've pretty much figured out the quarterback thing every year.
Right.
From four straight years with Clayton Thorson, and before him, Trevor Siemian and Kane Coulter, and before him, Dan Persa and Mike Kafka, and on and on back. I mean, they've not really had a problem at quarterback before. Mm-hmm. So that's why I kind of look at this season, as you put it, Kev, kind of fluky, yeah, because this has not been an issue for them in the past.
We've got about 60 seconds, Dave Ennett, Jordan Burnfield.
You're gonna cut me off?
No, I'm not going to cut you off. No.
It's all right.
Dave, we've got new bosses. I'm trying to, you know,
no,
stay on the clock.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you.
Dave's our boss. He can stay for as long as he wants. The Bears. Thoughts? Let's switch to the pro team, because I just want to hear what you've been covering the Bears for a long time, too. Let's go from Northwestern to the Bears. Also a very head-scratching season from the Bears.
Very much so, and I think at this point, they still have to prove it. I mean, great, what they did Thursday and what they did the previous Sunday to get a win. And then to on Thursday, shaky at times, but then they took control of the game. Now, I don't think Dallas, I've watched them a lot this year. I don't think that's a very good team.
No,
I agree.
So it's very possible. You know, obviously, you've got two division games on the road, and you've got that Kansas City game, which I think is still going to be, probably it's going to come down to what they do against the Chiefs. But, they still, in my mind, based on how they played over the past month or so, they still have to prove it.
Right.
You know, and they
is there a grad transfer quarterback for the Bears?
You know what, Jordan? There are a lot of similarities between the seasons those two teams have had.
Yeah,
there really are.
Some injuries, some struggles at offense.
Defense kept them in games. But
Ball's not bouncing their way. Yeah. Totally. A lot of comparisons. That's why I wanted to get Bears in, because I'm thinking Bears the whole time you're explaining Northwestern.
I get it.
I think that's kind of some comparisons. All right, Dave, great surprise visit from Dave Innett, fresh from Champaign.
I know. You guys accompanied me back up I-57.
Oh, good.
So
oh, God,
I had to come in and thank
and
you for
that.
That's
never an easy trip up I-57. No. All right, Dave Innett, thank you very much. Jordan Burnfield, the beat continues right after this.
Third down and goal. They try the same play again, and this time a touchdown to Taylor Gabriel. The sixth touchdown pass in this game for Trubisky, who had 12 starts a year ago through seven.
Oh, Mitchell Trubisky, what do we have on our hands? Is he good? Is he bad? Will he get better? Is he getting better? Kevin Powell alongside Jordan Burnfield as the beat rolls on here on WGN 533 on a Saturday. That is about a type of Saturday you'd expect on November 30th in Chicago and throughout the Midwest. Gloomy and gray and rainy, but we're tucked inside our warm studio, 18 floors up at 303 Wacker. Jordan, appreciate you riding shotgun today, hanging out. This has been fun. Dave Ennett with a surprise appearance. That was exciting.
That was great.
I know.
I mean, like, if I knew that Dave Ennett was coming in, then, I mean, this is just a cherry on top right
And
now.
You're going to be with Dave tonight, correct?
I know,
I don't want to give away too many details. I don't know whatever anybody else wants to reveal, but Mark Carmen's getting married tonight. So
He is.
Some of you will all be celebrating that. I'm looking forward to many, many stories from all of our radio and TV brethren that will be visiting.
I'll also be putting on my filled
Mark Carmen. please don't. Just go have fun. And
should
have
I be
cocktails.
Filing, like, live reports during the news? Do they want this?
Breaking news from Chicago, Illinois. Yeah. Mark Carmen has said
from
yes.
From the Carmen wedding. I'm Jordan Burnfield,
It is
WGN.
Official. Congrats to Mark Carmen. We love Carm. He'll be back, I'm sure, in next Saturday. Is he going on a honeymoon? Do you know anything about that?
I believe there are plans for a trip. I don't know.
Curtis
if it's
is
like
shaking his
full...
head, but has it made public, Curtis, before you get us in trouble?
He told us on Thanksgiving morning he's going to Jamaica.
He said that on the air.
This I knew.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Congrats, Carm.
Yeah.
Hope you guys all have a good time. Okay. Yes. As you may have heard, Dave Ennett, what a day he's going to have. Drives down to Champaign. Cats beat Illinois. Cats were 21-point underdogs in that game, Jordan, and they pretty much dominated from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, Illinois also had, like, nobody out there, none of their starters, right, too? Wasn't that part of the deal?
Yeah, but that seems, yeah. Anyways, Northwestern got a win. Dave Ennett just surprise popped in here. I think he's going to get ready for Jordan's, Carmen's wedding, and you guys will all head out. But I did want to get that question in to Dave about the Bears. We had a short response from him after talking some Cats. I'm not sure where you want to go with the Bears conversation, Jordan, because at this point it's like the storyline has been rehashed throughout the year. It's just kind of been the same old story. Now, I will say this. Now, before everybody goes nuts on me, I'm not defending.
Are we getting a hot take? Is this a hot take
alert? No, it's not a hot take.
Curtis, do you have like a sounder for Kevin's hot take alert?
I was just thinking of something I got to come up with.
I said this on CLT Sport, the sports feed show on CLTV. When I was on there last Sunday after that was a win. I'm trying to remember here.
Yeah, over the Giants.
Over the Giants, which as driving in to do that segment, I had to keep reminding myself that they had actually won the game because it was so ugly and there were still so many question marks left behind.
Still ugly.
This isn't a hot take. This is not me defending Mitch Trubisky's play, but it does appear he has made some strides over the past couple weeks. It just has. I'm not saying he's been good. I thought against the Lions, he was actually pretty good. He made some impressive throws. Now, not consistently enough, and he did have the bad interception. He did have a questionable run out of bounds situation on a third and short, which I saw that a couple times Thursday's game. It really gave me reason to wonder if he's a little banged up more so than we think he is, or more so than he's letting on, because he certainly did not look like he wanted to take a hit in those situations. He went out of his way to get out of bounds. Mitch Trubisky's handled himself like a pro. He has. He hasn't feuded with the media. He hasn't lashed out. I mean, players in modern day do things on radio programs. They do things on social media. They do things in media scrums. They get into it with fans on social media. We haven't gotten any of that from Mitch Trubisky. So I think it's just at least a worth.
Well, he's so vanilla that I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of fun. I mean, I've never heard him say anything that was noteworthy. Have you?
Noteworthy.
I mean, he's a pretty vanilla dude.
Yeah.
And he never really says anything in a news conference that would make you raise your eyebrows. It's been mostly cliches and shorter answers. And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing.
I'm just saying, Tom Brady's responses after every single game.
I mean, he's not here to win press conferences. He's here to win football games.
I understand
games.
That. And I'm not, look, I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that, Jordan.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're saying
but,
that.
But,
I'm
I, but
saying,
I see like the way people are piling on the whole situation. Look, nobody's been critical. Follow me on social media during a Bears game. I rip this team apart basically every single week. I'm not afraid to be critical of him. He hasn't been good this year. He's been mostly completely awful. But I think it's worth noting, like, if a player does lash out or embarrass themselves, people pile on and rip on that player. So, I don't know why. Maybe because it's the holiday season. But I at least appreciate the way Mitch Trubisky's handled himself.
Yeah, I mean, I would give him credit for that. He hasn't been a distraction in that way. I would say that the performance the last 2 weeks is a little bit marginalized for me, only because he's not facing good defenses, and he isn't lighting them up, right? And he was okay against the Giants, had two terrible interceptions in that game. In the game against the Lions, there were certainly things to like at points of the game, but he certainly didn't play a great game. And so you would think that if he were at least an average or above average quarterback, that he would light it up against teams like the Giants and the Lions, and he might regress a little bit in teams against better defensive units. And I don't think that he's been really good in any games this season. I mean, there was last year, you could at least have pointed to the Buccaneers game. Granted, it was a woeful defense, but he torched them. Mm-hmm. And he torched the Lions last year. And, you know, we really haven't seen that this year. And to me, I mean, yeah, the Bears have won two in a row. Good for them. They are trying to get themselves off the mat, and all they can do is win the games before them. And fortunately for them, the last 2 weeks, they've played favorable schedule teams, and they've won both of those games. But for me, you know, the game against the Rams was the one which would have allowed them to realistically stay in this thing. And the fact that they lost it, I think, says what you need to know. What is also an issue for me is that not only is Mitch Trubisky, I think at this point, clearly not the quarterback that's going to lead you to the promised land, but their defense is clearly not as good as it was. And I get that they have injuries. Akeem Hicks being out is a huge loss. Danny Trevathan's out, which is a huge loss. I'm not trying to discount either one of those things, Kevin, but I also think last year they were a lockdown, shut down, you were not scoring on them kind of defense. And this year they're a good defense, not a great defense. And we've seen that in the way that they've eked out these wins the last 2 weeks against subpar teams. They have not shut down. Daniel Jones and David Blauer, the quarterbacks you faced the last 2 weeks, and you eked out both of those games. So I think that there is a totality of concern here that is not piling on. I think it's fair. I agree that Bears fans often, take these things and they extrapolate them to a degree that isn't always the case.
Like with the Cutler situation, that was very clearly like that. You could kind of assess the body language of Jay Cutler and apply that and say, well, that doesn't look right.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Mitch Trubisky has not been good. There's obviously the question marks as if he's your quarterback moving forward. Now, I will break this news to you. At least in my opinion, he's going to be your week one starter next year.
You know, though, if he is,
I think he
and
is.
And they don't bring in
They're going to. Matt Nagy will be back. There'll be some changes with his coaching staff.
But you don't think that they're going to try to bring in?
Because that's what I just said. They're going to bring in somebody, whether they draft him or they sign a veteran free agent type guy.
Well, we were just talking to Dave about Northwestern and how basically that part of that conversation boiled down to, if Northwestern had a quarterback, they might have been decent this year. They were down to their fourth quarterback. They had no chance to win games because they couldn't score points. The Bears, in a less extreme example, might be the same thing, right? The Bears are a team that has a defense that may have regressed from a year ago, but is probably good enough to win most games, but they don't have a good quarterback. And that's why they're 6-6 as opposed to something better at this point. Therefore, to me, if you went into next year, regardless of how this season finishes, and Mitch Trubisky is the unquestioned starter.
I don't think he's going to be unquestioned.
That would
be such a
lapse in judgment on the part of the Bears.
But I don't think that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is they're going to say they're going to bring in competition. They're not going to completely sell everyone on Trubisky. They're going to word it and phrase it and think about it all offseason that the guys they bring in are there to push and create some competition. And competition, more competition never hurts when
you're
in
camp. But I don't even think that they have to hide it, Kevin. I think everyone knows what he is at this point. They don't have to hide it.
We've seen, though, they're like, they very much protect him more than they probably should.
I feel like they very much seem
to be afraid to let him fail because I think they're afraid that that would mean their failures because they're all tied together. Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, and Mitch Trubisky are all tied together. When everything that was given up by Ryan Pace, the hiring of Matt Nagy, the pairing of a young offensive-minded, innovative, at least we perceived him to be that way, and pairing him with the young project quarterback who was very much a project. He had only played 13 games. So I think that's why you are going to see them give Mitch as many possible opportunities because if Mitch fails, then Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are failures as well. So, and you know, the thing with the defense too, like, yes, I don't think they haven't been as good as last year or even really to start to this season. I mean, I remember the first three games against the Packers. I think they got to Rodgers they had three straight tackles in the backfield. They looked ferocious and nasty. The loss of Akeem Hicks is large, very large. The defense has still been good enough to win. They've been a top 10, top 5 in just about every defensive category. I'll defend them in this regard in that every single series for this defense, and I'm not kidding, just about every single series throughout the entire season for the Bears defense, because of how atrocious the offense has been, it has felt like the defense has had to have gotten a stop, a series stop, no points, if not a turnover, and scoring points. That's going to put a lot of weight and pressure on a defense. You can tell it's added up throughout the year. So to their credit, I mean, they've been pretty good this year. Now, Mitch Trubisky and the offense get off to a strong start offensively and score a touchdown on the opening drive Thanksgiving morning. And then David Blau hits receiver for, 75 yards because he got a blown coverage. Like that, you never saw that.
Also, late in games, Kevin, they've been really bad.
Against the Rams, they needed to stop, and L.A. killed the clock at the end. There's been at least three instances. I completely agree. Where at the end of games, they've allowed double-digit play, clock-eating drives that have completely killed any hope at a victory. He's Jordan Bernfield. I'm Kevin Powell. You're listening to The Beat. Plenty more Bears talk coming up. Blackhawks hockey begins at 7:30. Chris Bowden will have your pregame. John and Troy with the call at 8 o'clock as the Hawks take on the Avs for the second straight night. More coming up on The Beat. Yeah. 720 WGN, Kevin Powell with you alongside Jordan Bernfield. Hope you're having a great Saturday evening. Jordan, thank you. You're looking dapper today as you get set for a big wedding. Mark Carmen getting
pitched
tonight.
I mean, David Jennings just came into our studio and was complimenting me on my dress. I feel like that is a barometer met right there.
Well done.
Yeah.
So you look like a well-dressed Mitch Trubisky walking into a Bears game, Jordan. We're talking Bears earlier.
So am I going to give you short answers the rest of the way here?
Short answers.
Yeah,
he's got to grow a beard as well or something.
Have to be better.
Although I feel like he has looked a little more comfortable in some of his weekly pressers with the media. But there's no doubt over the past couple of years, he's continued to look very nervous talking into a microphone.
Yeah.
Which I can understand, but if you're an NFL quarterback, you got to kind of figure it out. You got to command every moment you're involved with, especially with cameras in front of you.
Listen, I'm not saying it's an easy thing to do, but I'm saying if you want to be a professional quarterback, this is what it is.
I agree, Jordan Bernfield. We've been talking about the decade coming to a close. For some reason, that's not like a big thing, but it's starting to, and I'm kind of hyped about it, and it gives us something to talk about, Jordan. So it's like people forgot that when there's a 9 at the end of the year, it means the decade's coming to a close.
I honestly, sort of like Dave, I didn't really think about it.
I don't know why.
Some of these things started, well, just because, like, is 2020 like a momentous year coming?
A decade has come to a close, it always has sort of seemed like a big deal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's cool.
And
I suppose.
Well, time's worst passing. Case, it gives us a topic of conversation on the radio, Jordan.
Well, so,
when you look back on the decade of Chicago sports, how would you classify it? How would you grade the last decade of Chicago sports?
I think it was historic in many ways. I think it was successful in many ways. I think
frustrating as hell in many times.
I mean, for the Bears, but if you're a Cubs fan, the 2010s was the best decade of Cubs baseball you've had ever.
Yeah.
And obviously, when it started, they were a bad team, but then Tom Ricketts hired Theo Epstein in, October of 2011, and since then, the Cubs have been, I mean, they weren't good until 2015, but they were building, and then they were wildly successful, obviously winning the World Series in 2016, but 15-team won 97 games, the 17-team went back to the NLCS, you went to 3 NLCSs in a row, in 18, you still made the playoffs despite some disappointment, and this year they went 84-78, and people feel like the sky is falling, which shows you how far they came in this decade. I think in terms of the Blackhawks, they had an historic run of success with 3 Stanley Cup championships.
Amazing.
And really successful teams all up until last year. I mean, really the entire decade they were good.
And I think for the Blackhawks, too, like it's John Greenberg in The Athletic had a piece. I thought he put it well. He said the 2016 Cubs were the team of the decade, the Blackhawks, the organization of the decade.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with the Blackhawks is that, they won the 3 Stanley Cups. But like the overhaul of the organization, I mean, for me growing up, 30 years old, right? I love the Hawks as a real youngster kid, like 7, 8 years old. And then all of a sudden, there's like this 10-year window, if not even a bit longer, of like nothingness from the Blackhawks.
Right.
And then,
but
like,
that's not just you. That's everyone.
Right. So, but like they kind of lost the generation. And then like people who enjoyed the Makita and the Hall years and all that. Like, and then what Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough did. And then all of a sudden, it was like this wave of just everything was Blackhawks, and it was so damn fun. Like, for a generation like me, like, yeah, of course I was rooted for the Hawks, but, like, you barely saw them on TV. They were never really around. They were definitely never top of mind. So it's like you almost brought in a whole new generation of fans who barely even had a chance to root for anything positive Blackhawks.
For sure.
The excitement, just everything involving the Blackhawks over the last 10 years has basically been perfect.
It's been
outside of missing the playoffs, but for the most part, it's been like, because not only was it just a great decade, what they did in this decade is going to go on for years and years and years and years.
There is a wave of people. I think this is sort of true of people in our age bracket with the Bulls, right? Like when we were kids.
I want to feel that again.
Right. When we were little kids, the Bulls were the biggest thing.
They were everything.
Right?
When I go Jordan, back and look at Scottie childhood Pippen, pictures, I'm all wearing Jordan jerseys and t-shirts and Bulls, everything.
So 10 years from now, there's probably going to be this very loyal, fervent group of Blackhawks fans that became Blackhawks fans because of this decade of Blackhawks hockey, just as there's a lot of people our age who, despite all the things that have not gone well for the Bulls, are still diehard, living and dying with the Bulls kind of fans. And we all have friends that are like this, right? That just, that like put on their red jersey the day that the season starts, and they're just crazy Bulls fans.
Totally.
That's going to happen, and I think it's already happening with Blackhawks fans. But I think it's also true, you know, not that the Cubs have really ever had a generational gap in fandom, but I think that what the Cubs did over this last 10-year stretch is going to stretch on for a long time. That's how these things work in sports. That's why you want to win games, obviously. But, you know, I think that when we look back at this decade in totality, it was the Blackhawks' decade in terms of the breadth of what they accomplished.
Yeah.
But the most seismic event that will be remembered is the 2016 Cubs.
Were you there?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wasn't at Game 7 in Cleveland, but I was at the games that were in Wrigley Field. And then for Game 7 and Game 6, well, really, mostly for Game 7, we got all of the family together.
That's a good way to
watch.
Do it.
Yeah, because we thought about going, and I'm not saying it wouldn't have been great to go, and there's no doubt it would have been great to be there. But to me, getting to experience it with all of the members of my family,
yeah,
and to have that moment, because really, I mean, not to sound pessimistic, but when you grow up a Cubs fan,
you expect to be rooting for a loser.
I mean, yeah, when I'm 34, okay, and when I was growing up, the Cubs weren't good. I mean, it wasn't like, yeah, it was pie in the sky to think that they were going to win the World Series. I think everything changed in 2003 when they got so close. And obviously the franchise changed from there, and they really changed how they were trying to win. They had a couple of years where they were in the postseason after that, but when Theo came in and turned it around, obviously it was a whole different thing. Now as a fan, I mean, I'm sure that there's Cub fans out there that are like me who are like, now that they've won, it's not that I don't still want them to win again, but there's definitely an edge off of it, right? Because it's like we got the thing that we'd always hoped to see, and I would like them to win again. Absolutely. I will be rooting for that. But, you know, it's a different thing, and I think that moment, whenever it happened, whenever the Cubs were going to win, it was going to be the biggest moment in Chicago sports in a decade. And I think that what the Blackhawks accomplished is incredible. And they are definitely the team that accomplished the most in this decade and had a historic run of success. But, man, I mean, that 2016 World Series is something else.
It's right up there. So many of those Blackhawks games were fun, too, because the Stanley Cup playoffs are so long.
Yes.
You know? So
it's another season.
It's
itself.
A whole other season. And, like, that age for me, I wasn't, like, I was working here doing some stuff, but I wasn't, like, covering them. So I was just watching really the whole thing as a fan for the most part, which meant a lot of late nights out with my buddies. You know, we were at one bar, and I don't know. I'm just going down memory lane at this point. But beer went flying after the Boston victory, the 16-second yeah, situation. Just so many. And there were so many double, like, multiple overtime games where you went out for a couple beers with your buddies. Next thing you know, you're, like, completely wiped out. So,
I mean, listen, when working here, I speaking for myself, working here and the fortune that I had to cover those Stanley Cup runs was incredible. I mean, being part of that was truly lifetime highlights, for sure.
This is The Beat. That's Jordan Bernfield. I'm Kevin Powell. I have more Bears talk coming up and some more Hawks talk and maybe some more Thanksgiving leftover food conversation right here on 720 WGN.
Miami and Dallas haven't allowed 100 points during the playoffs. Once again, the trap on Rose. Culver, yes. Well, it opened it up for Kyle Culver, who knocks down a three. His first of the game.
Two-man game with Rose and Culver. Everybody else just get out of the way.
Oh, there was a 2 or 3 year stretch there where Derrick Rose and the Bulls were just so much damn fun, and we all were convinced that they were going to win the Bulls' 7th NBA title, at least one of them. Welcome into The Beat, 720 WGN, 6:08 on this Saturday evening. I'm Kevin Powell alongside Jordan Bernfield, Curtis Koch doing a great job producing. We started this thing around 2:30. We weaved our way into White Sox Weekly. Now we're back in a sports, just general sports conversation. That's a highlight from Bulls 2011 where we keep kind of joking that no one's really even talking about this is the end of the decade, and I don't know if it's anything real monumental, but normally at the end of the decade, at the end of the year, you just kind of go back and remember, and we thought it would be something fun to do, so we've been just kind of recycling through some of the great Chicago sports moments over the last decade.
My hair is a lot grayer than it was in 2010.
because of the Chicago sports scene?
Partially, I would say.
I'll say this, though, about the current Bulls. The fact that Jim Boylan remains the head coach for the Chicago Bulls is an absolute embarrassment. I have no clue what the organization is doing.
Yeah.
There is little to no hope. This team was supposed to start making some strides and turning the corner, and they haven't. And there's turmoil between the coach and the players, and it's just really bad all around.
I can't disagree with most of that. What I would say is I think in basketball it's harder than in other sports, particularly in the NBA, to rebuild in a linear fashion the way fans expect it to happen. I'm not defending Jim Boylan as a
coach.
Why
do you say that? What do you mean?
Because I think that you have to get lucky in ways in basketball that you don't have to get as lucky with in other sports. For instance, I think in the NBA it is so star-driven and it is so dependent on having a transcendent player that even if you draft first in the NBA, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a superstar. There have been plenty of flops at the top of the NBA draft.
More flops than players that have worked out.
Yeah, so it comes down to, do you have the management team in place that has a track record of successfully drafting and developing teams? Now, before you say no...
They had a good stretch there where they built a team between Noah and Dang and Rose. No question.
So they got lucky.
That was kind of a long time ago.
They got lucky in the sense that they got Derrick Rose. Because if you remember, didn't they have like a 1.whatever% chance of getting Derrick Rose? But they got him. They got the first pick, and he turned out to be great, and they do deserve credit for building the team around him.
I agree.
The problem now, to me, is that when they traded Jimmy Butler and they went on the deep dive into Stinkhood to try to rebuild this thing, right? It was always a risk that they might not get the stars that are required to win. And I don't even think that they have terrible players. I mean, I think that Zach LaVine is a flawed player, but he is a piece that you could potentially win with. I think the same thing is true of Lauri Markkanen. The problem is, I don't think that any individually and any of their players are bad players, but I do think it's a lot harder than people think, to be fair to the Bulls, to just draft a bunch of guys and go, okay, go win, unless you get a superstar in that mix.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is why you probably don't enter a rebuild. How many, quote, rebuilds have gone to plan in the NBA?
Well,
not in today's NBA now, where it doesn't matter. You can rebuild and nothing happens. You either have to be...
I mean, Philadelphia built up from nothing and they haven't won a championship, but they are a very good team. The problem is the Bulls have proven in the course of time that Paxson and Foreman have been employed as the management team of the Bulls. They've proven that they can build solid teams, right? Good teams. And they got unlucky in the fact that Derrick Rose, his trajectory changed so much by the injuries that he suffered that no one could have ever foreseen happening, right? They might have won a title, just as you said in the open of this segment, had Derrick Rose never blown out his knee twice. And he was the MVP at 22 years old, right? Like, it was very reasonable to think at the time, before he got hurt, that the Bulls might eventually win a championship, even with LeBron James in the league, because Derrick Rose was that good at that time. So they got lucky to draft him, but then they got unlucky that he didn't end up becoming the player that he should have been
over the course of time. The injuries.
Right, but the injuries, I think, cost them probably 4 or 5 years of a window to win a championship because, you know, he was hurt. So I guess my point is, they didn't change the management team. It's the same people running the show.
Right.
The difference is that they're trying to go about this in a different way than before, which is to say they went down to the studs and they're trying to build it back up. They look like they have the makings of a team that could end up being a playoff team at some point.
That's
probably not this
much
year
in the NBA.
But right, they don't have the stars.
I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that the NBA, like, I've actually been fairly entertained by the NBA this year.
Yeah, it's a good product.
It is. Over the past couple of years, it's been almost next unwatchable for me. I think because of the fact that, like, for better or for worse, it is very much player-driven. These guys are going wherever they want to go. It just kind of rubs me the wrong way. And, like, yeah, you couldn't rebuild, but the fact of the matter is you're going to eventually have to get a superstar come to your team.
Well, the problem that the Bulls have
is
you're
getting
right.
the big fish.
Well, but to get the fish, they've got to prove to the rest of the league that they're a desirable location to be in.
Are they? But okay, but they how do. Like LeBron went to LA, I don't think because of the pieces that were there. He was like, I'm just going to go play for the Lakers.
That's different, though. He's the best player in the sport, and wherever he signs, his team is automatically going to be better because he's him. But I'm saying for other superstars.
Right, if you're a superstar, your team's always going to get better.
Yes, but I think that with LeBron, it was different because he wanted to be a Laker, and they were going to orchestrate whatever needed to happen for him to be a Laker. I think to convince other stars who aren't set on playing in a particular place, the Bulls are going to have to prove to other stars in the league that we are the up-and-comer, and they're not right now. But if they do eventually get to a point where they are decent enough that you feel like they're on the cusp of being a playoff team and they're a superstar away from winning, that's when they might be able to get the player. The biggest problem with that is that I don't know that John Paxson and Gar Forman could honestly argue that they are the people to land that player only because they have not to this point. They have signed secondary type stars like a Boozer or a Korver or a, you know, Jimmy Butler emerged as a great player that they drafted, but they never really were able to put, I mean, Dwayne Wade at the end of his career, but they haven't gotten a bona fide star in his prime to sign with them. So I think the only way for them to ever get better, Kevin, is for them to get to the point where they're decent enough that somebody wants to sign there and then prove, which would be, you know, ulterior to what we've seen in the past, that they can land the big fish. If they do that, then they'd be good. Unfortunately, in the NBA, that's really the only way to do it unless you draft a transcendent player with the first pick.
He's Jordan Bernfield. I'm Kevin Powell. You're listening to The Beat on 720 WGN. Blackhawks hockey coming your way at 7:30. We'll take you to that. More coming up on The Beat. I like Chicago's best. What's the best thing you've eaten recently, Jordan? I know you like to dabble. I like to try new restaurants, new food. I know you do the same.
I mean, Thanksgiving was pretty strong.
Yeah, I know, but is there a spot in town you've been to recently that was just off the charts?
You know, a new spot, I'm trying to think about where we've been recently. I will say that last night, my buddies and I from, you know, growing up from high school, we all got together and went to Sunwa Barbecue. Have you ever been there?
Where is it?
It's in Uptown.
Yeah, is this the place you got to basically wait in line to get into? It's on the corner there.
It's a place that's known for their Peking duck. Okay. It's right off the corner. I'm trying to remember. It's like right off of Foster.
Okay.
It's so they're known for Peking duck. That's their thing. And they carve it tableside for you. And it's a whole meal that you get with it. You get like the duck. You get duck fried rice that they'll make from whatever is left of the duck. A duck soup, and they make and they serve like bao buns with it, so you can make like little duck sandwiches and whatever. That is really good.
Superb.
Yes. Okay. I mean, there's plenty of places, but I'm just thinking of it because we went there last night. Right after the Thanksgiving bird, we transitioned to another bird last night.
I love it.
Yeah.
Portofino. Pizzeria Portofino, have you been there?
I've not been there, but
Thing I've had recently, get the rigatoni if you go. You'll thank me later.
All right. Well, if you want good pizza, I can give you some pizza.
Well, they have good pizza. They have like those quick like coal, like brick oven type pizzas.
Pauly G's in Logan Square.
Pauly G's.
Get yourself there.
Okay.
That is, trust me.
What kind of za are we looking at, Chicago?
So this is, they do Neapolitan, you know, wood oven, I think, pizzas. And then they also do what they're calling Logan Squares, which are like those Detroit style pizzas, you know, with the like the cheese that's caramelized
like
on the outside.
Kind of.
Yes, like Jets. You ever had Jets?
Yep.
This is like a much better version, basically.
Gotcha.
And that, nothing against Jets. I like their pizza too, but I would say this is better. And so that they do those, and they do like the Neapolitan wood oven, delicious. It's really good stuff there.
Would you say Chicago is a pizza triangle or a pizza square town?
I think that if you go to a like traditional tavern in Chicago, it's squares. I think if you go to, you know, like if you get deep dish, obviously you're getting a triangle slice.
Pie cut,
yes. But I mean, I've been to a lot of places like growing up. You know, I grew up in the north suburbs. Like, I'm thinking of, like, when I grew up going to, like, Judy's Pizza. That's a tavern-style place where they cut it into the squares.
Yeah.
And I always would take the triangle corners on the end, eat those first. That was just me.
Yeah, I think it's if you're getting thin crust, it's obviously square. I never growing up, I can ever remember eating a thin crust in a pie cut situation. Outside here and there, maybe like at like an arcade situation.
Well, that's why then you're getting usually like lower end.
You're getting
pizza,
like frozen
right?
pizzas that some guy nuked in the back.
Yeah, right. But I mean, like a good tavern Chicago style. That's also like one of these arguments that now exists.
I know. That's
why
I brought it up because it's so like the things we argue about now on social media. Like this was an argument that people go at it. Like, look, we can be pie cut and we can be tavern.
Can we like them both?
I love them both. Yes. I love deep dish and I love thin crust.
100%. I like them both. I mean, it's also like different moods.
Yeah,
it's different stuff.
Like if you're watching a game at a bar, you're not doing deep dish. Like, if you're gathering around, you get like a tavern-style pizza, and everybody kind of picks at it, and you get a bucket of beers.
Unless you have, like, an ironclad stomach. I would say it's a hard thing to have, like, deep-dish pizza and a bunch of beers.
Right.
And right?
And because you always feel like you need a nap. You feel like after Thanksgiving dinner, after you eat, like, Lou's or something, which is fine.
Which I love. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, if I'm getting Malnati's,
right.
it's about...
The night is about pizza night, right?
Yes.
You're not like, hey, let's go crush some deep dish pizza and then bounce around Hubbard and hit up all the bars.
Like, although I will say, when I was like 20, I could do stuff like that.
Yeah, I know, but it's bad. It's got bad news written all over it because you know, even if
now I can't do it, but at that time I could do that.
I'm so hungry now. I haven't really eaten much today.
Have either of you guys had home slice?
I have had home slice. That place is good.
Yeah,
it's a good place.
That's another place I've heard that's pretty good. I haven't.
Where's it at, Curtis?
Try it out. It's at Webster, in just south of DePaul, just south of the Red Line.
Okay.
Yeah. Right by the train there. Yeah. Good spot. Like that place. There's so many good places.
Oh my god!
But I'm telling you, I'm giving you Pauly G's, Logan.
Pauly G's.
You go there.
Okay.
And then when you go and you love it, you'll text or call me, and you'll be like, you were right.
And then my pick to click is Portofino. That's a new lettuce situation. So you go there and report back.
I'm in.
Get
I
the rigatoni and then whatever else you want. But make sure you get the rigatoni with the red sauce.
Fine.
Pauly G's, let me write that down.
By the way, Carm just liked one of my tweets.
Oh, my God.
His wedding is like in an hour.
I'm not kidding. Let's try to get him on the phone, Curtis, to do one final radio hit.
Yeah.
See if he'll do it, because this is something Carm would agree to
do. I'm just imagining him just, like, walking around nervously pacing, like, on Twitter, liking tweets.
Tell him it's a harmless radio hit, and we're just setting the table for a big night for At The Carm.
All right, I got it.
Did he say yes?
No, I'm working.
I feel like I feel like he would do it.
I think he's gonna,
I feel like he would do it.
Come on, this is exciting. This is like the pregame show to Carmen's wedding. And Carmen should be on the pregame. You always hear from the head coach before a game.
Yeah, that's right.
You should hear from the groom. What's the game plan going into tonight, Carm?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I just want to stick to the game plan.
Yeah.
You know, follow the X's and O's. It's been a great week of preparation.
We can weigh Carm versus Trubisky. Frankly, I would say Carm interviews would be way more entertaining than a Trubisky.
Totally. No brainer.
I mean, I would have Carm as the quarterback for the Bears just for the interviews. I mean, he'd probably get destroyed out there. However, his interviews would be outstanding. This is what I'm here for, Kevin. I'm here for the entertainment of it all.
I know. I'm just on the edge of my seat hoping Carmen agrees to this. What if we bring the whole wedding down? What if she gets all mad at Carm and cancels everything?
I don't even want to think about that.
This jerk went on the radio to do a pregame hit for our wedding.
Probably not the best move, but hey, you know.
Who knows?
We'll see.
She seems to do a live remote broadcast from the wedding.
From the wedding. All right, Carm is now walking down the aisle.
I'm surprised he didn't do that at my wedding.
He's sweating profusely. Let's take a look at a Konica Minolta swing vision camera.
I'll be filing wraps for Jennings. Don't worry. I'll get some news in there for
Carmen,
you.
Carmen very hesitant as he walks down the aisle one step after another. You can see his left hand trembling.
What is this, like Jim Nance is calling it?
He said live remote. We're going to do a play-by-play of Carmen's wedding.
We should have hired Jim Nance to do this, in the whispery tones. Hello, friends.
Hello, friends.
Welcome
in.
To the wedding of Mark Carmen.
Tradition unlike any other. Carmen getting nervous before something big. I love you, Carm. I hope he agrees to do this. You're listening to The Beat. Somehow this conversation has turned to nothing, no sports at all, but we've got about a couple minutes here. We'll break, and then you're bolting over to the wedding, correct?
That's right.
Following this.
Well, it was great hanging with you.
Yeah, thanks for
KP.
Hopping in.
Yeah, love doing the show with you.
Had a surprise appearance from Dave Ennett after Northwestern beat the Fighting Illini tonight, this morning, I should say, rivalry game. Nasty conditions out there, really all across Illinois. But Northwestern was 21-point underdogs, and they absolutely manhandled Illinois. So that's the way you finish a season which has been very, very rough go of it so far. But he's Jordan Birdfield. Thank you for joining me today over the past few hours.
Love doing it.
We started at, 2:30? It's already been 4 hours. We still got one more hour to go. It's a five-hour marathon. Chris Bowden's walking around. I'm going to beg him to get in here and talk some Hawks with me because I got an hour to fill here. You're listening to 720 WGN. It's 6:30 on a Saturday night. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you're having some fun tonight or just relaxing. It's a good weekend to post up on the couch, really, for the entire weekend. I went on a rant to start the show, which was about 4 hours ago. We still got an hour to go before Chris Bowden has your Blackhawks pregame about the Irishman and how much I loved it. Watched it last night. It's 3.5 hours. I had seen some differing opinions about it. Some people thought it was too long. Some people were hoping that it was a mini part series. I'm like, man, things are just so much different in 2019. And I mean, I kind of get it. Just because of the immediacy, we can get all sorts of different media. But there is a little bit of a media saturation going on where I think there probably is a little too much where it's quantity over quality. But it is what it is. Here we are in 2019. The Irishman, if you're looking for something to do tonight, maybe you're just, I don't know, been around shopping all day long. You're heading home. You've got the Netflix. Who doesn't have the Netflix? If you don't have the Netflix, you have somebody's Netflix password.
Or you're binging into Disney Plus now. That's new.
You're binging into Disney Plus, which went off the day it launched. Are you a Disney Plus member?
Not yet. I probably will at some point, but I'll wait until...
What are you waiting for? A
little bit of the holiday pay to come in.
Gotcha. In the last few weeks. Gotcha. Smart man. Smart man on a budget. Curtis Koch killing it in the producer booth. What's on Disney Plus that you, because you're all into the Disney thing, right? Don't you go to Disney World all the time?
Yeah, my family and I have gone the last few years down for about a week, but I'm a big Marvel guy.
Gotcha.
So I love the Marvel superhero series.
Are all of them on there?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow. I heard the Mighty Ducks is on there, and for me that might be worthy of a subscription for me.
That's another one, Mighty Ducks. You get all the classic movies, of course.
Yeah.
The Bambis and Cinderellas and Toy Stories and all that. But there's actually a lot of different stuff on there that I've seen.
And if you get the full package, you get the Nat Geo stuff too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
See, I'd be more interested in that stuff. Like the Disney stuff is kind of faded for me. I mean, I love all that. And Pixar's Disney too, right? So
yep.
You can probably get some of that stuff as well. Anyway, started the show talking about The Irishman. So if you get nothing going on tonight, I know you're thinking, oh, it's 3.5 hours. That's a big undertaking. For me, I mean, first of all, anything Scorsese has done, I love. And seeing Pacino, Pesci, and De Niro in the same movie, in the same scenes, it's just so damn cool. And to think about, and I'm not trying to paint this as a farewell tour by any means, by Scorsese or by any of those guys, because they have created a masterpiece. This is one of the best movies I've seen in a long, long time, and I'm really not trying to oversell it. It was 3.5 hours. I really wanted to watch it again the second it ended. It is outstanding. Richard Roper sold me on it. He told me it was one of the best of the decade. I'm like, okay, if Rich says that, I trust Rich's opinion, obviously, on all things film. So I said, all right, last night, yesterday was a perfect day to just chill out after Thanksgiving. It's been a long week. You know, the holidays, I got some friends in town, so when you have friends visiting, to them it's like a vacation, but you're also like, I gotta work, man. I know you're here on, it's kind of on vacation, but they're like, they want to go out every single night, and I'm like, you guys are gonna kill me. So anyways, I think I pretty much went out every night, and then there was Thanksgiving, and then yesterday I'm like, I'm doing nothing, okay? I'm doing nothing today. I'm posting up on the couch. I'm eating all my leftover food, had some turkey, had some broccoli cheddar rice casserole thing that my mom makes that's off the charts, had a little pumpkin pie. The day after Thanksgiving, trolling through the kitchen and grazing on all of the Thanksgiving leftovers is really something to behold. Because it's really kind of disgusting when you think about it. Like, I needed to take a shower last night before I went to bed. Because you go and then like you open the fridge door and then you nibble on some turkey and then you go back to the couch and then you go back to the kitchen and then you open the fridge door and you take a bite of pumpkin pie. It's just really like a 48-hour stretch for me where I just don't give a damn and I'm eating everything and anything that's in front of me. Did you have a good Thanksgiving, Curtis? I didn't even ask you. That was
I
so
did.
Rude of
yeah,
me.
It was a small gathering. My family of four plus grandma, grandpa, an uncle, and a cousin. So it was just
nice.
Eight of us, small gathering occasion. We have a big thing at Christmas every year.
Big Christmas?
Yeah, we usually have about 20 to 25 people at our house for Christmas. So Christmas is the big thing, but since the last few years have been a little bit hectic in terms of who's hosting
what. Schedule and whatnot.
Yeah, and schedule and whatnot. We just decided to have a small gathering at our house this year, and it was great. Lots of stuff. I still have leftovers at home. Like you said, I have stuffing, butternut squash risotto at home.
Ooh.
Yeah, lots of stuff.
Butternut squash risotto, I like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. A little white wine in there, too.
Wow.
So a little bit of mixture of everything, but yeah, it was great.
Favorite holiday, Curtis?
Christmas. Lots of traditions for our family around Christmas time. Like I said, we host a lot of people at our house for Christmas, so it's great seeing everybody and, of course, getting into the Christmas spirit and giving gifts, receiving gifts, all that fun stuff, too.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about, Curtis. Family, by the way, it appears to have been a single doink in the Iron Bowl, which is Auburn against Alabama, but Alabama was down 48-45, and their kicker hit the post with about 2 minutes less, and Auburn has topped Alabama. That's the thing. The worst-case scenario after the incident that occurred in the playoff game against the Eagles earlier in the year was that would be this dark cloud looming over the franchise moving forward.
Yeah.
When that game ended, I think it was just complete disbelief what had just happened.
I was here working a Blackhawks game when that all was taking place.
The Hawks play that day?
Yeah, they played that night, yep. And we were watching it on the screens in the studio next to us, and Chris Bowden called it. We were sitting there and we were watching as the period was going along, and right before he said that, right before Cody kicked it, he said he's gonna doink it, like kind of like half jokingly.
Did he really?
And then sure enough, it happened, and Chris was, and I and Krista Flores, who was working the game, were all in disbelief and kind of laughing, not so much as in a good way, but like nervously, kind of like what just happened laughing.
I mean, people were completely devastated after that one. And rightfully so, because the Bears have been so bad. Last year was such a breath of fresh air where you had this new team. The defense was awesome. You had some hope on the offensive side of the ball. They were winning a ton of games. Matt Nagy was dialing up the right play call. There was some creativity in his play calling. It was something we had never seen before. It was really easy to buy into the team. They go 12-4. They win the division. They clinch the division with a win over the Packers. It finally felt like they're turning the corner and the Bears are real, and not just for like a fluky year, but it looked like they had a foundation in place moving forward for quite some time. Now, I'm not saying completely that window's gone. I mean, you look up and down this roster, and I think that's one of the factors for a lot of people of why this season has been so frustrating. It's because I really do believe there's a lot of talent on this team. It's just a matter of getting everybody on the same page, particularly on the offense side of the ball. I mean, Allen Robinson is playing like a legit number one. He actually has good numbers, which is saying something considering how pathetic the Bears offense has been. He's actually putting up some pretty dang good numbers. Anthony Miller appears to be turning the corner over the past couple games. He's made some nice catches, finally getting acclimated into the offense. That was one of the questions I had as the season started progressing, and this was week three, week four. It really felt like Matt Nagy was trying to dial up plays for specific players rather than just calling the right play. And there was such a wealth of talent on the offense. I mean, Gabriel, Miller, Robinson, the tight end position has been non-existent. That's been a serious problem. By the way, Adam Shaheen placed on season-ending injured reserve. So he's provided nothing in the 2 years when everybody was so high on him when they took him. In the second round? Correct? Second round, Curtis?
Calling him Little Gronk and all
little
this stuff.
Little Gronk. Yeah. And I mean, he appears to have a tool set that would allow him to be a legitimate tight end in the NFL. This hasn't worked out. Much of that has had to do with injuries, which he can't control. But, man, he just never fit in. Trey Burton, ever since he mysteriously disappeared before the game against the Eagles, his former team, he's been next to nothing. You got Browniker out net next. And then Horsted makes a great catch against Detroit, so keep giving him the rock. And then the running game, of course. This is just me venting on the entire Bears season, apparently, but the running game has just been so bad. So bad. And, remember they were making those t-shirts back at training camp? The Run DMC, David Montgomery, David Montgomery, Mike Davis, and Tariq Cohen. We thought it was going to be this three-headed monster in the backfield. Mike Davis was waived like week six or week seven. Tariq Cohen, clearly not a feature running back. Matt Nagy has failed to figure out how to get Tariq Cohen the ball in open space. Again, you're going to tell me Tariq Cohen doesn't have talent? He has talent. There's talent on this team. But it's getting these guys in the right situation. Last year, it seemed like they were able to find ways to get Tariq Cohen in open field. Now it seems like every time he gets the ball, whatever the defense is keying on, they seem to always be blanketing Tariq Cohen. It seems these little slant patterns or dump-offs to the left or dump-offs to the right, and then there's minimal yardage picked up. They call it yak, yard after the catch. Like it's, you haven't seen that from Tariq Cohen. So they're 6-6. Is there any hope? I guess. I mean, technically, they're still in it. They need just about everything to go their way. 312-981-7200. Do you believe in this Bears team moving forward? Was this just not their year? The ball didn't bounce their way. I mean, you can't make that argument. Like, last year, a lot of things went their way. A lot of times, they created their own break. But basically, this year is a complete opposite of last season, right? I mean, last year, they had so much luck in the health department. They really didn't have any major injuries. Kyle Long went down for a significant amount of time. They didn't have Eddie Jackson in the playoff game. Eddie Jackson was an all-pro last year. That mattered. But outside of that, for the most part, like every team's going to deal with some injuries here and there. Trey Burton not showing up for the playoff game, too. I shouldn't say not showing up. He just wasn't able to play with a groin injury. Now, you look, this year, Akeem Hicks goes down. Danny Trevathan goes down. Those two are the heart of the defense. I know Mac's the most talented. He's the best player on the defense. But like those guys are in the middle. Akeem Hicks is just eating up the line of scrimmage. Danny Trevathan is the clear-cut leader, and if not the entire locker room, certainly the defensive unit.
The other thing, too, is that Hicks and Trevathan also, when they're on the field and in that lineup, you can have the offense on the opposing team focus on them every once in a while.
Absolutely.
And then you take pressure off Khalil Mack.
No doubt.
That helps Mack get into the season that we saw from him last year, how much big of an impact he's been.
Yeah, Mack doesn't have the numbers that we were anticipating, but a large part of that, I mean, like Leonard Floyd, where have you been? When are you finally going to break out and be a star defensive player, your first-round pick?
Roquan Smith is another one that...
Yeah, well, Roquan's picked up. He had a real good game against the Lions, but he did have... I agree. There was a stretch there where Roquan didn't look all that great. But Roquan was damn near dominant against the Lions. He was all over the field. Did have a penalty called against him, which I very much disagreed with the call. It looked like they called a late hit or whatever, unnecessary roughness out of bounds. But it appeared he had just tripped up with the offensive player, and they fell out of bounds. But all around, I think, 15 sacks? He was really good. And I love the way Roquan plays when he does play with confidence, which is a ton of speed, pursues the football, makes the sure tackle. So, I don't know. I don't mean to dwell on last season, but it's just very easy to compare this year to last year and just be like, how did this possibly happen? And that's what the Bears and Ryan Pace should already be thinking about, is how did it get to this point? How did it possibly get here? I mean, the hype going into the season. And I thought it wasn't blind Bears optimism, Bears fan optimism. I thought it was legit. I really did. I think I had him at 12 wins. I was convinced Trubisky would make some strides. He wasn't outstanding last year, but he did have some games that gave you enough to say, okay, maybe this is the reason they drafted this guy second overall and traded all those picks to move up to get him. But it hasn't worked out so far. Again, they are 6-6. Man, basically every game they've been in has been tight. Right? I'm trying to think of a game that was really out of hand. But if this offense had figured it out, and I was, you know, Jordan Bernfield was in here earlier, and, you know, we were kind of debating about the defense. He's like, well, they're not what they were. I'm like, well, they're not what they were because of injuries, because of Hicks and Trevathan, and because of the offense. The Bears' offense managed to kill the Bears' defense. No other offense could get to the Bears' defense except the Bears' offense, indirectly, but they did it. Because it's felt like every single series for the Bears' defense has felt must stop. That's a ton of pressure on a defense. A ton of pressure. Now, there has been some inexcusable moments, like during that Thanksgiving game when you let David Blough throw a 75-yard touchdown pass. Is it 75 yards? after your offense had spotted you seven. It's like all we've been talking about is, okay, if the offense could get something going early, maybe that could take some pressure off the defense. That could force the other team to start throwing more. That could allow more opportunities for the Bears defense to make some plays like they did last year. So 6-6 moving forward. We've got the Cowboys are in town Thursday. That's a team in the playoff hunt, but they really don't look all that good. I think I've picked them to win almost like every game. I think I have. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm Kevin Powell. Curtis Koch is in the producer booth, 312-981-7200. If you want to chime in on Bears or really anything all afternoon, we've been going back and playing back some highlights from the last decade. I don't know if you heard, folks, breaking news, but the decade comes to an end in about a month. So we were just having some fun with it, playing back some memorable moments from throughout the decade between the Blackhawks, the Cubs winning it, and some other good times. So 312-981-7200. Feel free to chime in on just about anything Chicago sports related. You're listening to The Beat on 720 WGN.
From the 22-yard line now, Trubisky stepping up, fires down the sideline. Robinson makes the catch, but a flag is down. For the moment, it's ruled a touchdown, but there's a flag down.
Pass interference, defense number 29. His penalty has been declined. The result of the play is a touchdown.
What was that one from, Curtis?
Last year's wild card game.
Oh, that was the
go ahead touchdown.
Oh, that's right. My mind was just going to the doink. I don't know why we're talking about the because Alabama hit. They doinked. It wasn't a double doink, but they doinked and they lost the Iron Bowl to Auburn. Big time loss for the Crimson Tide. Yeah, that was, the double doink situation is one of those things, like in 50 years, someone's going to say double doink and you'll know immediately what they're referring to, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that's horrible.
Remember when people thought that it was tipped?
It kind of was.
Was it? I thought,
yeah, because
after people just had like a, it barely looked like the guy tipped it.
Yeah. And you know what stings too, is that he made the kick before.
Yeah.
So I was covering this game for the station. Adam Hogan and I were covering it. And so a lot of times when, like, you cover sporting events, a lot of times, like, reporters will head down early from the press box. They'll get down to,
yep.
You cover Blackhawks
yep.
stuff now. So like, because then you're not stuck, like, in an elevator or the mad rush. Like, everybody's been to a sporting event. Like, you know, when this last play happens, everyone bolts it. So, like, especially at Wrigley Field, like, almost all the reporters will start heading down, like, in the top of the ninth inning because Wrigley's Wrigley and things can get crazy. So, for Bears, I always go down early as well. And there's an interview room where that's where Trubisky and Nagy do their interviews and, like, all of those, just the quarterback and the coach. And if there's other something big, they'll bring somebody in. And then the locker room's a little bit ways down. So, a lot of reporters go down just to beat the rush. Then we watch like the final few minutes in the interview room. There's a TV in there. And then when the game's over, then we all walk over to the locker room and then we wait for them to let us in. But I took the elevator down. I didn't want to miss any of it. So I get off the Soldier Field, such a maze. It's just crazy because they basically built a stadium on top of an old stadium. But I get off the elevator. I'm like in this lobby area. There's a TV there. So I watch for like a second. I think he has a completion with Robinson to get them into field goal range. So then I have to go downstairs. Then you go into the tunnel, like the tunnel of Soldier Field. And I'm like, I don't want to miss what happens. So I got to get in front of the TV, and I'm kind of watching as I continue to pass through each tunnel that goes to the field. But I'm running because, like, I don't want to miss this. So I'm running. I'm like out of breath. I get to the interview room. Thankfully, get there in time. And It was tense in that room because there are members of the Bears organization in there as well, as along with other reporters. But I'm watching on this TV, and my phone is just blowing up because everyone's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And it was just like it was just unbelievable to see that happen. After he made the first one, but they got the timeout in, that's when I was like, okay, I think he's going to miss the second one because he was bad all year.
Yeah.
He missed like 11 kicks. And then he went on Good Morning America or whatever it was.
The Today Show.
Today Show. Yeah, we've been talking about the Bears all afternoon. A text from the 815. Kevin, you are right. Pace and Nagy can't have Trubisky fail. Then they are done. Jordan is right about the defense losing some key players. Jordan and I were just talking, having a lengthier discussion about the Bears and the significance of some of those injuries to that Bears defense. Yeah, it's a mess. It's kind of a mess right now. Curtis, your overall thoughts on this Bears season? Can you sum it up for us?
Very disappointing. I thought they were going to probably be around the same as they were last year. One game that I had marked on my calendar before the season even started was coming up in 3 weeks with the Chiefs coming to town. I thought that was going to be a really big test of the offense because you know what Pat Mahomes has brought to the Chiefs the whole year. And, of course, you know that at the time before the season started, you were expecting Trubisky to hopefully take a big leap and become a guy not exactly quite like Pat Mahomes was last year because he was just on a different level, but somewhat maybe even half of that would have been amazing, and didn't even get nearly a quarter of that this year. It's been overall a very disappointing year, and I was still hoping that at some point they would get the kinks worked out on offense, but I think it'll bring up a different discussion come next preseason if they are going to start playing their starters more in the preseason because of the fact that they didn't play them much at all the last 2 years. And, you know, I think the reps are definitely somewhat to be taken care of and to be taken into consideration, especially when you look at teams like the Patriots where you have Tom Brady still taking his reps in the preseason.
But do you think the Bears wouldn't have these problems if they practice, if they actually played in a few series?
I don't know, but I still think it would have helped. I mean, because really Trubisky's first game action was week one against the Packers.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I think the one thing, not necessarily even getting better by getting those reps, more so of maybe Matt Nagy seeing what he has and kind of, like, it could have been more of an eye-opening situation. Like, whoa, what is this? This is a mess. But you don't know in the preseason.
Yeah.
So that's where the Bears are at. 6-6. I'm Kevin Powell. He's Curtis Koch. Appreciate you tuning in. It's been a marathon of a day. We started at about 2:30 after Northwestern football, and here we are at 7. I'm not good at math, Curtis. So I don't know how many hours that is, but we've got one more half hour to go. Chris Bowden is standing by. He's in our pregame studios getting set for Blackhawks hockey as they get ready to take on the Avalanche. In Denver, we'll have that game at 8 o'clock. John Weideman and Troy Murray are standing by. You're listening to 720 WGN. This is The Beat.
Cat Hawk line left wing, sent it in over the line, intended for Smith. Taken away by Saad to Richards at center ice. To Kane over the Lightning line, right point. Flips a saucer pass to Keith Heislaut. He shoots, butterfly save. Keith falls under the rebound, scores! Duncan Keith! His first goal in 16 playoff games and his first to the final. The Hawks take a 1-0 lead on the Lightning with 2:47 left in period number two. The Madhouse is on Madison again.
Gotta love it. Johnny Weideman and Troy Murray. You're going to be listening to them in a little over 30 minutes. Well, yeah, faceoffs at 8 for the Blackhawks and Avalanche tonight in Denver. Chris Bowden. I can see him working diligently, preparing his pregame show, which is always excellent. That's coming your way in about 20 minutes. I'm Kevin Powell. This is The Beat. Thank you to Curtis Koch. A long list of people on the show today. Jordan Bernfield sat shotgun for a while. James Fegan was on White Sox Weekly. James covers the White Sox for The Athletic. Always does a great job. And Dave Ennett with a surprise appearance. It's been, in terms of guests today, it hasn't been the easiest because, like, between the holiday weekend and Carmen's wedding, like, half the media, half of our go-to guys are at Carmen's wedding, and I'm texting all of them, like, we're at the wedding. And we almost, folks, got Carmen to come on, but we had to go to news at the top of the hour, and by the time, I'm pretty sure his wedding starts at 7:30, so by the time we got out of news, that would have been tight. I sent him one more Hail Mary text, Curtis, to see if he could give us a call in.
Yeah.
Because Carmen's gutsy like that. He might be feeling it. Might be hyped up.
He might be talking to us while Chelsea's walking down the aisle.
Oh, God. Very happy for the Carm and soon-to-be wife. Congratulations, Carm. He'll be back here, I'm sure, next Saturday or sometime soon. Rarely a day off for the Carm. It's like the man tortures himself. One listener, 708 listener, wow, Carmen finally took the day off so he could make it to his wedding. I'm surprised he didn't work a morning shift or something today.
Well, you know what? He had a wild Thanksgiving day because he was here anchoring sports for morning drive. And then he had pre-game and then he had post-game. And that was all after he hosted Wednesday night into Thursday morning, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
What?
Yeah.
I don't even think we should say that on air. I don't think that's even legal, technically, in terms of labor laws. Seriously, though, congratulations to Mark Harmon. 312-901-7200. Text in your number, and we'll give you the secret location of Mark Harmon's wedding. You can go crash it and say hello to him. Curtis, appreciate your work today, this afternoon. And this, of course. It's been a long one. What time do we start? About 2:40 today?
Yeah, just about 2:40-ish.
Curtis, do you have a girl? Are you in a relationship? Do you have a girlfriend? Speaking,
I'm not in a relationship. Nope.
Are you interested in getting in a relationship?
Of course.
You are?
Yes.
See, like you said, of course, like it's matter of fact. For me, I'm like, I don't know if I want to have like a serious relationship right now. Aren't you a busy man? You're probably constantly getting texts from work being like, hey, can you fill in and produce?
Yeah.
At this miserable shift from like midnight to 7 in the morning or something?
Sometimes, yeah, but... You know what? It's all part of the business here.
Yeah.
When you have to work those long shifts.
Have you ever heard of cuffing? Cuffing season?
I have heard of cuffing season. Yes.
So give me your description of cuffing season.
Wow. I guess it's my description would be you get a little frisky with some nice little fuzzy handcuffs. I don't know quite how to describe it.
Cuffing season is this. Cuffing season. We're in cuffing season.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like cuffing down with someone for the holiday season.
Got it. Okay.
Because it's time of year, like, people really don't want to be alone. There's cheesy Hallmark movies on. It's people you can cuddle. You
can't really avoid it either, because there's all the love songs of Christmas songs and stuff like that, you know?
Right. But, like, people get in, and there's a lot of events going on. There's parties and stuff. So, like, cuffing season is basically finding someone for the holiday season.
To get through the season.
But, like, kind of have an agreement that this is just cuffing season situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's part of it. Like, the you know, 312-901-7200. Has anyone ever just gotten into a relationship and it was very much clear, like, we're just doing this, like, for the holidays?
For, like, 2 months.
For, like, 2 months. You can me before Valentine's Day. We'll call it a day. You have a great life. I'll have a great life. I wonder if anybody's actually ever done that. I'm sure somebody has done that before. Like, oh, I'm just going to do this holiday relationship. And then it turned into something serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, damn it. Cuffing season got me. Like, that's what I'm afraid of getting in a relationship, Curtis, is like a real long-term relationship. Then being like, I guess it's a commitment issue situation.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why. I think it's because I love this job so much, and the thought of like something that big entering my life could potentially screw this up somehow. I don't know how.
I would say I don't know how that would happen.
It could just the possibility, Curtis. I love this job too much to risk it. I don't need risk any more risk in my life. I give myself my own risk. It could ruin it. Something could happen, Curtis. Or
something,
I could get distracted.
I could
lose focus. But, like, it wouldn't even be her fault. It could be my fault losing focus on what matters to me, this job.
See, but you have that mindset, though. You got to change the mindset. What if it would make you better?
Damn it, Curtis. Stop making so much sense. But it's the risk of it making it worse, Curtis.
But it could be the risk could turn into a reward.
How would it be? How?
What if she's also a big sports fan?
I've been in relationships where the girl has zero desire to watch a second of sports, and the opposite.
Well, see, then you just
and I'm not sure what I like more.
What you're looking for find a girl who is into sports,
because I was kind of into it when she what the one girl I dated when who she didn't like sports, because I was like, she was like, okay, whatever, like, go do your like, that was my thing, you know. But then it got to be a little bit too much, because like, I don't know, this is an excuse I can pretty much carry the rest of my life. As long as I'm in this industry, I have to watch the game.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, you can't. There's gonna be certain things you get talked out of, but at the same time, you could be like, "No, sorry, I can't watch Dancing with the Stars. I've got to watch the game. I've got to talk about it on air tomorrow."
Or, "I'm sorry, you can watch it in here, but I'll be in the bedroom."
Right,
and
that's
I'll
why
watch
we have two TVs.
Yeah,
you go to like the basement or the other room. So my roommate has a girlfriend now, and she's slowly but surely working her way into the place.
Yeah.
Like, I go into the bathroom, and there's, like, seven more some sort of soap material, like, in the shower. You know what I mean? Like, for us, we have shampoo, we have soap.
Yep.
And And she's super cool. I like her. But I could tell there have been some nights where she's like annoyed that I'm watching a sporting event. I'm like, look, I'll go to the basement TV. I don't care. And I really don't care. It's no big deal. But then, like, I think she thinks I'm, like, mad at her. I'm like, I'm not mad at you. I don't care.
Yeah.
You're super cool. It's I already told TV. My roommate he should totally, like, be with you long term. He should probably marry you. You guys are a great couple. But I don't want to watch Dancing with Whoever or Real Housewives of wherever.
Or The Voice or
you know the show that still I don't understand is the Dancing with the Mask head thing on?
Oh, The Masked Singer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that looks like a comedy bit out of like a movie mocking American culture. Like, who watches that? Because it's not even the person singing. It's obviously just like a recording. Like, you think the person singing in the microphone through that giant mask?
I was
going to
say, wasn't Antonio Brown on that show?
I think he was.
Point?
There was a football player.
Like, I can't imagine him being nothing against Antonio Brown, but a relatively good singer.
Yeah.
Dancer, sure. He might have some dance
moves.
Well,
a lot of times you see football players on the Dancing with the Stars. There's been a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because good footwork. They're good athletes. They know how to move around a little bit. Like, wasn't Jerome Bettis on it? I think Von Miller was on it.
I think Tiki Barber.
Tiki Barber was on it. So, I don't know. Cuffing season, Curtis. So, do you do the social, the dating apps?
Sometimes.
You dabble? Some swipes in?
Not really. I'm more of an old school guy. Like, yeah. Actually go out and, like,
meet someone.
Somebody naturally. Yeah.
Like at a bar or something?
Well, at a bar, or if you're like, for example, up by me, I live in Lakeview, so the Gallagher Way, they have the ice rink there.
Oh yeah.
So you may meet somebody around there that's shopping or checking out the different
Chris Kinnear Market. There you go. Uh-huh. That's like an original Instagram pop up location.
Oh yeah.
You know how like places just do stuff that are like you're clearly like I went to a bar the other night, and it was. It was like a pop-up Christmas. Like, they decorated Christmas, but they themed it. They made it like a tiki bar Christmas situation.
Oh, that's pretty
and
cool.
And it was jam-packed.
Oh, I would bet.
It was jam-packed, especially for a single guy, Curtis, if you catch my drift. So, yep. Like, there was a spot where you can take a picture. You know, it's like had like a tiki Christmas situation. I'm like, this is how you get people into your bar.
You got to go to those pop-up bars, too, like the Friends pop-up bars or the Office pop-up
those
bars.
Work. Those work. But, like, Chris Kindlemarket, super photogenic. Right, and that's been going on for decades.
Oh yeah,
right. But that's like that's like an original Instagram pop up location. I mean, you can get enough Instagram material there for like 2 months just from one night at Chris Kindlemarket. Okay, that's me on various matters. Kevin Pollard, you're listening to The Beat. Curtis Koch in the producer booth. More to come on 720 WGN. Wrapping up here on The Beat, Kevin Powell with you. Thank you so much for listening. Thankful on this Thanksgiving weekend that I got to be right here for the last 5 hours. It was a long one. We started. Was it 5 hours? Did we start at 3 or 2? What time did we start?
Just before 3 o'clock, so like 2:40-ish.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a good run. Good 5 hour run. You did the real work, Curtis. The producers never get enough credit. You know, I started as a producer, Curtis.
I know. Work in the morning drive.
So I always appreciate the work of producers because they do the real work. You like producing, Curtis?
I do.
Do you?
I enjoy both sides.
What's your ultimate goal?
I like reporting. I like going out to the games and
being in the action.
Part of that. Yeah.
It's good. Where'd you go to school?
Columbia College, Chicago.
Oh, that's right.
I'm here in the South Loop.
How long have you been at GN? Like
actually,
3 years? 2 years?
And later on, I think Tuesday or Wednesday, it'll mark 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah.
Curtis Koch doing work. Thank you to everyone who listened. Very sincere congratulations to Mark Carman, who's getting married, I think in like 10 minutes it starts. So Jordan Bernfield was in here sitting with me, and he took off to go to the wedding, and I think Dave Ennett was here. He was getting ready. Long day for Dave Ennett. Calls a Northwestern victory, and then he stops here at the station. We have like random bathrooms that are like not just your regular bathroom at WGN. We have like showers. Pretty sure somebody lives in one of the bathrooms. But
got a few rooms to take naps in.
Yeah, a lot of rooms to take naps in. Half the time I walk into the room to make a call, there's someone in there, which is fine. But it's just they're always getting use, which is good. By the way, did you play high school football, Curtis?
I played high school baseball.
High school baseball. Okay, well, we're going to go with high school football here, considering the state finals are underway at Northern Illinois. 7A, Mount Carmel is about to clinch a state championship. They're up 37-13 on Nazareth. That's an impressive victory. Nazareth has a quarterback that's one of the more top recruited quarterbacks in the entire nation. So 37-13, Mount Carmel, man, just continues to crank out great season after great season. There's still a little bit of time left, 29 seconds in the fourth quarter, but Mount Carmel up 37-13. The 8A game coming up after it is Lincoln Way East, who just always seems to be in the thick of things, taking on Warren. Both of those teams undefeated. In 6A today, East St. Louis topping Prairie Ridge 43-21.
Prairie Ridge is my alma mater.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
I'm sorry, man.
That's all right. They've won, I think, before that. They've won like two times in a row. They were like back-to-back.
Yeah, they're always really good.
They're always in the run.
So that's all right. Rochester knocking off St. Rita 42-28. Richmond winning in 4A. Williamsville in 3A, Sterling in 2A, and I believe it's Lena, 58-20 victory in Class 1A. When I first started working, Curtis, I was doing reporting for a radio station in Central Illinois.
Yeah.
We had a big Friday high school football extravaganza, and we didn't really have GPS as strong as we do on our phones now, so I was driving through cornfields at night with printed out maps trying to find these tiny schools with like 50 kids in them.
Before I worked here, I did play-by-play for Huntley High School.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh.
What's the Huntley mascot?
The Red Raiders.
Go Red Raiders.
I was a small local community station out in Huntley.
That I
did interning for a number of years before ending up here.
There you go. Were they any good?
Yeah, they went to the playoffs. They were actually one round away from state. They lost just before making it.
Pretty cool for Jordan Lynch too. If you hear that name, you're not exactly sure like why you remember that. Jordan Lynch led the Northern Illinois Huskies to the Orange Bowl back in 2013. I want to say it was 2012. Obviously, was a star at Northern Illinois. Was a Heisman finalist. He became Mount Carmel's head coach 2 years ago, and now his alma mater is about to win at this year. They held it at Northern Illinois, so that's fitting. Pretty cool for Jordan Lynch to have that honor.
Comes
full circle. It does. So congratulations to all the IHSA state champions, and still one more game to come. As I said, Lincoln Way East and Warren just about get going up in DeKalb. Again, thank you all very much. It's been a long day here, and it's been so much fun, and I'm thankful for everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Curtis, Dave Ennett, Jordan Burnfield, and James Fegan as well. Blackhawks hockey's coming up in just a couple moments. Chris Bowden's getting set for his pregame. I think he's mocking me through the other studio. More to come. We'll hand it off to Chris Bowden in just a few minutes on 720 WGN. All right, final couple minutes here on the beat. Kevin Powell filling in for Mark Carmen, and Mark is about to get married any moment now. We were very much trying to get a one last radio hit from Mark Carmen. And we almost did, but the timing didn't work out because I think he was getting ready to walk down the aisle, and it just didn't work out, unfortunately. But Mark Carmen, congratulations to you, my man. Hope you guys have a great night and a lot of fun. Thank you again to James Fegan. Thank you to Curtis Koch. Thank you to Jordan Burnfield and Dave Ennett. Blackhawks coming up. It's Chris Bowden standing by in about 90 seconds or so. I'll hand it off to him. So we get set for Blackhawks hockey. Hawks in the second of back-to-back against the Avalanche. I was a big fan of the 3 o'clock start yesterday, and we ran into Rocky Wirtz, stopped by the show, the Eurocon show. We do remotes out there once a month, and we last saw him, he was telling us how excited he was about that 3 o'clock start because a lot of times the Blackhawks have the circus trip or they're off on the road, and they don't have that opportunity to have that afternoon game. That's a perfect time to play, like, because yesterday I was doing nothing but lounging, so I was looking for more and more on TV. Now the Hawks didn't exactly play their best last night. They lost 5-2, and the Avalanche got off to a fast start. So Chris, I'm sure, is going to preview this one much better than I am currently, but I was a big fan of the 3 o'clock start. Curtis, you like that 3 o'clock Friday start, afternoon start? I like it. It gives me something to do.
Yeah, it was fun. They had the Black Friday, like the black uniforms on. I think four black,
which threw
Friday,
me off a little cool bit. Following the all black.
Yeah, you know? I liked it. I thought it was a good start.
They were cool too. I think those were the ones they wore for the
outdoor game.
Yeah, the outdoor game at the Notre Dame Stadium. That was one of the cooler things I've been a part of. Been able to go to a bunch of cool stuff working at the station, but the Notre Dame Stadium experience for Blackhawks was very cool despite them losing that game as well. So.